Welcome to Sipping Success, the ultimate podcast for all things beverage and alcohol. We're here to quench your thirst for insights, analysis, and a splash of entertainment. Get ready to dive into the world of beverages with us. From the latest trends to in-depth discussions with industry leaders, we've got it all covered. Whether you're a connoisseur or a curious sipper, Sipping Success is your go-to guide. Join us as we uncork knowledge, raise a glass to innovation, and help you elevate your brand to new heights. So grab your favorite drink, sit back, and let's sip success together. Tune in to Sipping Success and drink in the wisdom. Cheers. This podcast is brought to you by Mushroom Media, the go-to digital media agency for all things marketing. From crafting captivating campaigns to decoding social media sorcery, Mushroom Media is here to empower your brand and help you scale. So whether you're brewing, distilling, or concocting the next big thing, Mushroom Media has a solution for you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sipping Success Podcast. I'm your host, Casey Hawkinson. And this with this episode, we're very happy to have John Eason. He is the CEO of Sidewalk Side Spirits. And if you're not familiar, Sidewalk Side Spirits is a spirits brand incubator company founded in 2020 by spirits industry veteran John Eason and the owners of Cocktail and Sons, Lauren Miserkoff and Max Messier. Their first brand was a collaboration with the undisputed king of king cakes, Gambino's Bakery, to create Gambino's King Cake Rum Cream. This award-winning product was born out of their love for Carnival and all it means to the hundreds of thousands of revelers who celebrate across the country every year. So I know there's more products within the incubator. John, you'll probably be excited to share with us. But we're very happy to have you with us. You're joining us from your home in New Orleans. Before we get into all of this, I guess a lot of our listeners, we'd be interested to know like your history with getting into spirits and then ultimately what led you to your present day with running Sidewalk Side Spirits.
Gosh, being from New Orleans, you're kind of born into spirits. Yeah. You know, Louisiana was the last state in the country to actually adopt a 21 age rule, right?
Everybody okay, yeah. was 18. It was 18.
I think the government threatened to take away the highway money if the state of Louisiana did not go to a 21-year-old law.
Okay. Now, so
growing up in New Orleans, it's not unusual for your parents to give you your first beer or your first glass of wine. You're brought up around alcohol. Some people may not think that's the right way to go. I, on the other hand, thought it was the best way to go because it didn't scare you or intimidate you or you weren't shocked or awed by it the first time you got out into a public situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was a smart way to grow up, I thought. You know, my dad gave me my first beer, I think, when I was about 13 years old after a fishing trip and I caught my first big fish. It's just the way it was. I worked at a bar when the drinking age was 18 and I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little crazy, but
at that time, could you legally pour being 16, being close in age, or were you still kind of fudging the laws a little bit?
Actually, I was the bouncer.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess a whole other line of questioning then. So you could work around booze being 16 though legally or
and you know really no one asked how old you were. You know, if you were old enough to get in and behave yourself, and it, you know, there was usually an off-duty policeman somewhere around, and I mean it was really a different time, and especially in New Orleans. But that sort of gave me my love of going to bars and restaurants early and loving nightlife and clubs. Mm-hmm. And live music. Mm-hmm. And there's no better city in the country than New Orleans for all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I played a lot of sports growing up. And all right, so you played football on Saturday and Saturday night you went and saw a concert. And you know, you might have had a beer or you know, a Jack and Coke. And then mm-hmm. you went home. I mean, it was much simpler times back then. You know, you'd have a local policeman who, you know, if they saw that you were inebriated, they'd call your parents to come get you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was that small of a town back then. Nowadays it's not like that. But that gave me my love for going out, for having a drink now and then, to, you know, being in a lot of social situations. And then when I started college, I put myself through school as a walk-on nose guard and working at a bar.
Mm.
So I kept working in that bar. When I graduated, a friend of mine who worked for a liquor distributor offered me a job. And his line was, well, wait a minute, wouldn't you like to sell liquor to all the bars you used to go to that you're friends with?
Yeah.
Wow. How's that for a bad job right out of college?
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, never forget, $17,000. Thought it was all the money in the world.
Mm-hmm.
17 grand. Back then, I guess you could actually make a living. You could live on $17,000.
Yeah, you might have been making cost of living for sure.
I just told y'all how old I am. But, you know, so I worked for the liquor distributor here in town for 5 years.
Okay.
And I got offered her a job with Brown-Forman. So I never thought I'd ever leave New Orleans. I love it. And one of the reasons I created Sidewalk Side Spirits was it gave me an opportunity to move back. I left kicking and screaming.
Yeah.
So went to Brown-Forman and had fun and learned a whole lot and got a couple promotions, and they moved me around a little bit. So my wife and I ended up moving from, let's see, New Orleans to Dallas, Dallas to San Antonio, San Antonio to Houston. And then once we were in Houston with Brown-Forman, I got another job with a company called Domecq.
Okay.
Which at the time was Presidente Brandy and Salsa Tequila and a couple of small things. And they merged with a company called Allied Lions, which was Hiram Walker. So okay. Hiram Walker at that time had Maker's Mark and Kahlua and Cavassier and Stoli. Huge company. Second biggest liquor company in the world.
Okay. So
I spent 11 years with those guys and ended up being promoted to run half the country. And then I went to a meeting one day and with our distributor, Glazer Wholesale, and there was a little bit of a contract dispute between Allied and Glazer. And the next thing I know, I'm the general manager of Glazer Texas over the Allied division. So I kind of got traded back into a distributor for a couple of years running the Allied business, which was really a fantastic education for me. I would not be able to do what I do now had I not had that position.
Okay.
So did that for several years. And then the president of North America for Allied Domecq started his own brand called X-Rated. Pink, has a white X on it, kind of like Hypnotic, but pink. Well, I was his national sales manager, and we blew that up and sold it for a bunch of money in about 4 years.
Okay.
So I had a small piece of that and you know, kind of took a year off and coached my kids' football team and tried to reconnect with my family. Because, you know, when you have those jobs, you're gone 4 or 5 days a week. You're just traveling from state to state, going to meeting, putting out fires, shaking hands, kissing babies. It's kind of crazy. So after we sold X-Rated, then I met a gentleman from Puerto Rico whose family owned Don Q Rum. And they wanted to bring Don Q Rum back to the United States and build out a rum company.
Mm-hmm.
So I became the COO of Seralis USA, which was Don Q Rum. And then later we added Barrow's Intense Ginger, and we cut a little deal with a startup called Death's Door, which was a distillery out of Wisconsin.
Okay.
So did that for 11 years and then was offered an opportunity to be the CEO of a U.S. version of a tequila company called Tromba. Had a lot of friends there. Tequila is amazing. The gentleman who's a distiller is the original master distiller of Don Julio, Marco Sedano. Mm. And we were doing awesome. And then COVID hit.
Mm.
95% of our business was done in restaurant bar. So you can imagine the carnage that happened. So had an idea to do my own brand, which was the King Cake Rum Cream.
Okay.
And the guys wanted me to furlough people, and they wanted me to take a half salary for a while. And I said, I tell you what, if you let me do this and turn the other way, I'll hang with you. I'll make sure you're okay and taken care of. I just got an idea for a brand. It doesn't compete with our tequila. Of course, we'll be using my distribution network. That's how you get Trump out. It's not yours, it's mine.
Mm-hmm.
And we sold about 5,000 cases in 4 weeks.
Wow.
Without even knowing there was going to be a Mardi Gras or not. People were just so pent up, and Mardi Gras was canceled. So they saw this in the grocery store next to the King Cakes, and they just went crazy.
Wow.
So, you know, I looked at my wife and I went, hey, this worked out pretty good.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can do this a second time. And if it works, we might have a business here. So, you know, I'm still on the board at the tequila company, and we're all still dear friends. I signed an agreement with a company called 375 Park, which was going to be an import company for them. And they really didn't need me anymore.
Okay.
So that gave me the opportunity to quit, stay an advisor and involved, but then launch this King Cake brand, more states at a bigger level, plus move back to New Orleans because it didn't feel right living in Texas, running a company off a Louisiana brand.
Yeah.
So I think the hardest sale was my wife because, you know, she went from not having to work, living in a nice place in Keller, Texas, to, hey, honey, I need you to get a job so we can use your insurance. Married 35 years, man. That's a good one. That's a good one. So she took the leap with me. Max and Lauren are partners. They own a cocktail syrup company that's got a pretty big following amongst national accounts. And that was it. We were sitting around dinner and they have a King Cake cocktail syrup. And I knew the guys who owned Rum Chata, and I did them a favor on something. And when I sat with Max and Lauren, I said, hey, do you guys think this would taste good with the rum cream? And they were like, oh, absolutely. Wow, that's a good idea. I said, yeah, but could you come up with the formula to do it? And Max is really gifted when coming up with syrups and formulas and things. Mm-hmm. And man, he had a prototype right off the bat. And so we went to get to the people at Rum Chata and I said, hey, I want to call in my favor. Can you make this? So they were kind enough to make the first batch. It's kind of funny. I really wanted to do a store. I wanted to call it after a bakery, because if you've ever been to Louisiana, there are several bakeries that make really phenomenal king cakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know anybody in the space. So of all things, I went on LinkedIn and started looking up bakeries. And there was a gentleman named Dominic Selfo whose name popped up under Gambino's.
Mm-hmm.
And it said in his biography that he had once worked for Anheuser-Busch.
Ah.
That's my guy, right?
Yeah.
My guy. So called him and left him a message. It's so nuts. Called him, hey, I'm John Eason. How you doing? I'm in the liquor business, blah, blah, blah. Have an idea for a brand, blah, blah, blah. Sure would like to talk to you about it, blah, blah, blah. Man, I got a phone call back in 5 minutes. Next thing you know, I'm going back to New Orleans to meet him and his brother. And then we went through several different versions of the formula. And then I signed them to a licensing agreement where, you know, they get a piece of everything that we sell.
Yeah.
And they also help promote the brand. And in turn, we promote their brand. So we're very aligned in our marketing. If you go on their website, it'll take you to our website where you can buy a bottle. If you go to our website, it'll say, hey, do you have your King Cake yet?
Yeah.
You can hit on that and it'll take you to their website to buy a King Cake. Super people, you know, just really good partners. And the whole thing has just sort of been nuts how well it's all gone.
And just as a sidebar, what's Gambino? How long have they been in New Orleans? What's
Oh my God, Gambino's is the largest baker of king cakes in the United States.
Oh, wow.
They have been around for generations. Matter of fact, the son just purchased the bakeries and the king cake business from the father.
Okay.
Maybe a year and a half ago. So all this sort of comes together at the same time, you know, this is happening. So the younger generation now has the bakery, and they're very, you know, they're very interested in what we're doing with the cream, and they've been, you know, they've been great partners, and they've been a big help to Max too. And as Max has to them, Cocktail and Sons uses nothing but Louisiana local ingredients in all their cocktail syrups and mixers. It's not unusual to find Max over at the bakery trying out different types of cinnamon with the owner of the bakery. That's a room that smells good.
Yeah, I would imagine. And that's so, okay. Another kind of point of curiosity is, so you've got that particular brand in the incubator in your company. What are some others that are available right now for people to experience?
We just launched probably about 9 months ago, Parthyde Strawberry Whiskey, which is an 86 proof strawberry flavored whiskey. Unlike most flavored whiskeys where they're artificially sweetened and the sweetness is over the top, we let the whiskey take the lead and there's just a hint of the natural strawberries.
Okay.
We buy our strawberries from Ponchatoula, Louisiana, which is kind of strawberry capital of the world, and maybe about 30 minutes from New Orleans. True story. Ponchatoula has 8,000 people that live in it.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 300,000 show up for the annual strawberry festival.
Oh, wow.
And Ponchatoula looks like Mayberry. Remember the Andy Griffin show?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Ponchatoula kind of looks like Mayberry. It's pristine. It's
beautiful. Really?
Downtown Ponchatoula is like a two-lane street with
okay.
A really interesting antique shops, some art shops, a couple of really great restaurants. And until recently, the mascot, whose name is Hardhide,
mm-hmm.
Alligator, who lived in a facility smack in the middle of downtown.
Oh, wow. So they had a real life.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And is Ponchatoula, I'm not familiar, like, is it north, south, east, or west from New Orleans? Where
about? Oh my gosh, I'm going to butcher that. We never say north, south, east, or west around here. We always go left or right.
Yeah. Okay, but I won't put you in this stuff in.
But it's about 30 minutes from New Orleans, 25, 30 minutes from New Orleans,
okay.
Heading towards Baton Rouge.
So that'd be about north. That'd be north, yep.
Yeah, we would say north would be Shreveport.
Okay. That's great. We're learning our kind of New Orleans vernacular here along with it. So
Hardhide is going to become our flagship brand.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. We have several more flavors that we're looking at doing. You know, another point of difference is we're going to do them at 86 proof, where most flavored whiskeys are 60.
Okay.
Right. I mean, I want whiskey for whiskey lovers with just a hint of something, not something that's overpowering and sticky and artificial. So we're looking at a peach. We're looking at a honey satsuma. I'm really lucky. You know, one of our partners is Hobie Wedler, who's a pretty famous food scientist. He's involved in the flavoring. We make Hardhide strawberry at the Porch Jam Distillery in New Orleans.
Okay.
We're probably going to do the second flavor at a distillery called Sugarfield in Gonzales, Louisiana.
Okay.
I've recently signed an agreement to represent Sugarfield's brands, and they are amazing at what they do. They have a line of rums which are to die for, and they've also got some really good bourbons. The climate is really great for barrel aging, it seems, for rums and bourbons in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. They're actually the official vodka of Louisiana State University Athletics.
Mm.
You know, so he's very plugged into the Baton Rouge community. They've got a lot of SKUs, some really special liqueurs. they'll be rebranding some things, changing some things, but they want to be known as a rum company.
Okay.
So that's what we're going to focus on working for them and their rums.
Okay. And so you've got that, and you said Hardhide Strawberry Whiskey is going to be your flagship. And then going back to the King Cake Rum Cream, the vision on that, is that going to be more of a seasonal kind of during Mardi Gras?
It's always been seasonal everywhere except Louisiana, obviously. Parts of Texas and Florida.
Okay.
You know, it just lends itself to that row. We do have some plans on the table to expand the Gambino's line, but it's like anything else, right? Money.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So far, I have done this with only 1, 2, 3 investors at a very small amount of money. One is my best friend from high school. One is my best friend, one of my best friends from college. Mm-hmm. And one is my cousin who just refused to take no for an answer. and the three of them.
Those are good people to have on your team. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we have a venture capital gentleman who has sweat equity to help us with financial needs. Named Chuck Chand, who was a gift from the gods. He's done a whole lot of venture capital deals for spirit brands.
Okay.
And then having Hobie involved is a great balance, where Max has his syrup knowledge, Hobie has his food science knowledge, mm-hmm. and now the folks at Sugarfield have the absolute distillation and production knowledge. So I'm kind of quietly put together a team that can make anything we want to make, no matter what it is. But we'd like to stay true to our ethos, which is we want to make Southern spirits that people have a good time with, you know.
If my
brand doesn't sell 1,000 cases, 1,000,000 cases in New York, it's not the end of my world. No offense to me.
Yeah. So just out of curiosity, you've got a lot of these, irons in the fire. And so, and you kind of say you say that you're an incubator. So are you also going to kind of open your doors to, like, let's say there's an entrepreneur in New Orleans or Louisiana for that matter that has an idea? Are you willing to work with that ball of clay as well?
Sure. I think what we're going to try and do next will be putting some feet on the street. Right now, I'm kind of a one-armed paper hanger as it comes to sales and distribution and marketing. We'd like to get a couple of feet on the street to help us. I recently put on somebody to help us with national restaurant chains. Okay. And that guy's doing a phenomenal job. His name is Carlo Barone. He's been doing this a long time and has a lot of great connections. It's really hard in this time to be at one of the big distributors and be so small. I'm really blessed to have the relationships and the experience that I have with those distributors who, I'll just say it, they give me a little more attention and affection than maybe the size of my company warrants.
Yeah.
But I've made everybody money wherever I've been and have always paid my bills on time. So, I'm all right. I'm a good risk.
That's great. So very interesting. So thanks for kind of diving back into that. I guess I'm interested to even kind of, pivot back into your career again, because it's a very interesting story. Can you talk to us about or share with our audience a challenge or obstacle that you faced in your career that you're particularly proud of that you overcame?
Whew. It always surprises me where I am now versus where I started. I didn't have any giant hopes or anything. Hell, I thought I'd be playing linebacker for the Saints.
Yeah.
Which is a problem unto itself. But to have come so far, that's really tough. I've been through a lot of difficult spots.
Okay.
Usually, I'll say this. I've always believed in myself, and I've always been pretty fearless. And like 99% of people born in Louisiana, we have no filter. So don't ask a question you don't want an answer to.
Yeah.
because you're going to get an answer. And then if you punish us for our answer, God help you. I'll give you a fun one. I launched Casamigos Tequila.
Okay. And I think in that Casamigos, just to highlight that, that's the George Clooney brand,
that
right?
That is the George Clooney, Mike Meldman, and Randy Gerber tequila brand. Very challenging. You have George Clooney, who is an absolute gentleman, but very busy filming. You have Mike Meldman, who is an absolute financial genius, who owns Discovery Land Company, which I believe is the largest chain of resorts in the world. Mm-hmm. And really, really smart man and generally nice guy.
Uh-huh.
And then you have Randy Gerber, who was the driver of that brand, who not always the nicest guy and pretty challenging to deal with sometimes. We sold more tequila in our first year than Patron sold in their first three.
Wow.
And they were not happy with those numbers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Mr. Gerber had a different idea on how a sales force should look as opposed to how a sales force should be.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention the guy was just batshit crazy sometimes. And if Randy, you ever hear this, I ain't saying anything I hadn't told you already. But, you know, it was a very difficult situation. I felt like we were always attacked as a company. I felt like we were always on the defensive and having to justify the accomplishments we did do.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, our company made a very large amount of money off the work we did. And that brand was a success. And we were a very small company. And it ended up going to a very big company.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel good about that in some ways. In some other ways, I feel terrible because it started a whole cavalcade of famous people tequila. And man, not all of them are good.
Sure.
You know, now every you know, mid-level movie star, or mid-level TV star thinks it's the thing to do to own a brand. So first one out to shoot, you know, and you know, we feel good about the job that we did there. Very proud of the job I did at Don Q. That brand was only in Florida and New York when we first started.
Mm-hmm.
And we took it nationwide within a year and a half. And that is the national product of Puerto Rico. And you're going to be hard pressed to drink a better rum than that. If you ever go to Puerto Rico, it outsells mm-hmm. Bacardi 12-1.
Wow.
Nowhere in the world does something like that happen to Bacardi. And guess where they make Bacardi? Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
So why the whole United States hasn't caught on to how much of a superior product this is just one of life's mysteries. But you can chalk it up to bigger, better budgets and more marketing over the course of a million years, right?
Yeah.
But you know, we did some really special rums out of there. We were the first to do several different types of barrel aging. You know, I still have great ties over there and am still very fond of the family. And it was really special, you know. Oh, heck, I never thought I'd make it out of Allied Domecq. I mean, I ran half the country for second largest spirit company in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Don Easton in New Orleans. Man, look, I'm a C student, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I know somebody makes the joke, the alcoholic beverage industry is the only place in America you can be a C student and make a million.
Well, and that's great. You know, thanks for again sharing that. Some of those stories; those are timeless. Just as a reminder, you've been listening to the Sipping Success podcast. I'm your host, Casey Hawkinson. We're having a very interesting, fun conversation with John Easton. John Easton is an industry veteran plus CEO of Sidewalk Side Spirits, and you know, sadly, John, we're getting down to our last couple questions, but I know this will free you up to kind of go back about your day in New Orleans. Before we leave you, I always like to ask people, you know, particularly the founder or CEO type, what advice would you give to somebody looking to succeed in spirits?
Do your homework, know the room. you can't do it by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder and harder for people to do it now than it's ever been because the distributors are fewer and they're contractually obligated to publicly traded companies. So you gotta fight. You gotta be charming. You can't give up. You have to sell your brand, yourself, your company, and you have to win the hearts and minds of people who are going to be selling your brands.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be Diageo and, you know, throw an incentive out there and make things really difficult for a sales force and demand things to happen. Not when you're a small guy. You have to get in the car with people and ride and go see accounts. You have to go and show up. Can't miss anything, man. If there's a promotion and you can go, you gotta go. You gotta shake everybody's hand. You have probably the best person I've ever seen at this is Tito Beverage.
Mm. Yeah.
So I've known Tito, I don't know, 20 something years. And Tito is still Tito, man, down to his boots. And Tito never missed anything. Always said please, always said thank you. Shook the merchandiser's hand, shook the salesperson's hand, was never afraid to get dirty or do anything he wouldn't do himself. People forget that, but the right people remember it. And it's easier to be liked and to do it that way because, you know, hey, the big distributor has to make the Pernod Ricard number this month. Man, I'm sorry, John. I don't have it. You know, we got to do Pernod. So how do you get your stuff worked? You have to know salespeople. You have to work with them. You have to know mid-management people who will move things through for you. You have to know senior management people who will kind of get other people to look the other way while you're out there working your ass off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really is a matter of being relentless. If you're going to do spirits or RTDs or beer, I mean, gosh, everybody wanted to be a brewer for a while. Now everybody wants mm-hmm. to own a distillery.
Mm-hmm.
Make the best stuff. But if you can't break through the distribution network, you're not going to get it in the hands of a consumer. So many tentacles now, so many barriers. And you got to know which one to put your head through and which one to kiss to get to open the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well put. And then as a last question, John, because we have a lot of industry professionals listening to the podcast, a lot of what I would call like entrepreneurs in the industry. So if anybody out there would want to reach out to you and be in touch, whether it's a question, whether it's maybe they've got something they'd like to partner with you on, what's the best way for people to reach out and get in touch with you?
Man, my cell phone's on the back of the bottle, I think, and on every label we got.
Oh, wow.
I'm not afraid to talk to anybody.
Well, okay.
That was kind of the joke, right? I mean, we were all sitting here going, okay, whose phone number gets to be on the website? And finally, I'm like, look, if anybody's got a problem, who's it going to come down to at the end? Me.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. I'll live with it. If it ever gets so bad, then I'll just hire somebody to answer the phone. And wouldn't that be awesome? Yeah. Wouldn't that be fantastic? But I mean, I get calls. You wouldn't believe the calls I get. I mean, I was actually driving with my son the other day and we were on our way to a Saints game and two women had come to New Orleans to party. And I got a phone call asking where they could buy the King Cake Rum Cream because they saw it somewhere and they had to have it.
Uh-huh.
Because that night they were going to get drunk in their hotel room and order in. And I'm like, okay, well, what hotel are you? Okay. Okay. That's in this part of the city. Yes. Okay. Well, are you near, you're near a Rouse's grocery store? Yes, ma'am. That Rouse's grocery store is two blocks from your hotel. You can go to that Rouse's. Oh, no, I'm the owner. Yeah. No, really. I own it. This is my cell phone. I'm on my way to the Saints game now, y'all.
Oh man, that's great.
I have a 20-minute conversation with these two nice old ladies who were taking some, who just got a wild hair from, they were living in Houston, got in the car, drove up and decided they were going to eat and drink through New Orleans that weekend.
Not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. Well, okay. So there you have it, folks. If you want to reach out, just grab the back of a bottle of.
Grab the website.
Yeah.
And I'm on the website.
Okay. And so, and actually we'll mention the website.
sidewalksidespirits.com.
So sidewalksidespirits.com. That's great. Remember that, sidewalksidespirits. And then, if you've got a question about the product, about anything, or, you know, just want to check in on the Saints score, I'm sure John can help you out.
Yeah, I won't be helping out too many people this year.
Yeah. Sadly, they missed the playoffs. But you know, there's always hope for next year, I guess. Well, okay, wonderful having spent time with you here, John. You've been listening to the Sipping Success podcast. We have been talking with John Eason, and we're looking forward to keeping up with the website, keeping up with your brands that you're building. And, you know, I'm sure we won't be a stranger. We'll reach out maybe into later this year and see how you're doing. But thanks again, sir.
Oh, man, thanks for having me on. It was fun.
All right. You've been listening to the Sipping Success podcast. I'm your host, Casey Hawkinson. And until next time, thank you for joining us.
And that's a wrap on another insightful episode of Sipping Success, brought to you by Mushroom Media. We hope our discussions have left you thirsting for more knowledge in the world of beverages and alcohol. Stay connected with us on social media for updates. And remember, the journey to success is best enjoyed one sip at a time. Keep exploring trends, connecting with leaders, and scaling your brand. Until our glasses meet again, cheers to your continued success. And may your cups always runneth over with inspiration. We'll catch you in the next episode.